The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 331, recorded on November 4th, 2013. And welcome to the 331st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 164th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So yeah, we're actually getting very close to the first next-gen launch. I mean, it's only 11 days away.
Well, you know, technically the first next-gen launch was the Wii U, but do we really count that?
No. The Wii wasn't a current gen, for one. The Wii U is a current-gen console. It's not a next-gen console. But, you know, so the PS4 is coming out, and all sorts of information is starting to come out for both consoles, really.
Yeah, that's true. It's a week from Friday, the PS4 launches, and then, what is it, a week or 2 weeks after that?
It's 1 week after.
The Xbox One.
It's 1 week after. Yep. The Xbox One launches, not coincidentally, on Black Friday.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so what have you been playing?
I haven't been playing anything. I'm laid up in bed with a busted foot, so I haven't really been doing much of anything.
Yeah. They did patch Batman Arkham Origins.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. So I got
You got the tip that I emailed you on the whole raft situation thing, right?
I didn't need to, but from what I understand, the raft randomly generates anyway. So I completed the mission, and the story, I think, was better than the second games, not quite as good as the first games. It was a little over-cinematic, the ending, with Batman decking someone several times and going into Zack Snyder slow-mo during it, you know? So it was sort of, you know, mildly pretentious, but, you know, at that point I didn't mind. The characterizations of everybody, though, is really, really good because you get the first hint of where Jim Gordon finally starts to not view Batman as an out-of-control vigilante, you know? I mean, when he takes down an enemy that it looks like he killed, you know, Jim Gordon, you know, just calls him a murderous vigilante, you know, and he says, I didn't kill him. I have to stick around here to give him a defib. You go and do your thing, you know. And it's at that moment that Jim Gordon figures out who Batman really is and that he's not going to kill anybody, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, if you ever read the novelization Nightfall, Jim Gordon actually says when he's thinking, you know, you're a useful tool until you kill someone. When that happens, then all bets are off, and then I'm after you. So, oh, by the way, did you ever see that Batman the Animated series in which there's this fantasy about Batgirl being killed? And
I have seen all of Batman.
Yeah, but that particular episode, you realize how ruthless and how good Jim Gordon can be, you know, in that fantasy. You know, in which he's able to deduce who Batman is. He goes after him, you know, and he goes after him full force. So you never really get an idea until that episode how good Jim Gordon can be.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean,
it'll be interesting to see that they're in talks to do a Gotham TV show, which would be interesting to see.
Well, didn't they have that TV show about the three characters?
Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, which lasted about a season.
It was Huntress.
Huntress, Black Canary, and Was it Batgirl?
I think it was Batgirl. Yeah, Barbara Gordon.
Oracle was in it. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I never got to see it, but maybe that's the problem. So,
it was all right. I watched the first few episodes of it before it got canceled.
Yeah, that sort of reminds me of Unsub, you know? Unsub was so good. And it came after Manhunter, and then every single show by Stephen J. Cannell copied it, you know, the forensics genre. But Unsub was the first, you know, and I don't know, CBS treated it so shabbily. You know, we're turning this into a television podcast right now, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so.
But anyway, the thing about it is that I completed the main story, right? And according to the thing, I only completed 28% of the game.
So you need to still go back and do some side missions, it sounds like.
Yeah, but the thing is, the main campaign wasn't exactly short.
Oh, okay.
You know, it wasn't short. It was like a good 15 hours, maybe. And the story was kind of meaty, although it did feel like it ended a little prematurely. Then I found out, now there are 8 assassins after you, right?
Right.
But only like 3 or 4 of them appear in the main storyline. The other 4 you have to go find.
Shiva,
you have to find her.
Did you actually find them all?
No. I'm starting to do Shiva's little side quest.
Gotcha.
But
well, there's your other, you know, 72%.
I guess. It's disappointing, but then again, you know, it's still extra stories. So I don't know if they're going to be releasing single player stories for Batman Arkham Origins. That'll be interesting to see. Maybe they will. I mean, they did with Harley.
They could do DLC content with even more assassins.
No, you know what I would like? If they did DLC in which you took on the role of Robin, you know, or at least you meet Robin for the first time. Or, you know...
Do you take down Tony Zuko at the circus?
Actually, wouldn't it be Nightwing? Because Nightwing appeared in... he didn't actually appear in Batman Arkham or a City. Only Robin did, but it was a Tim Drake Robin, which implies that, you know...
There have been others, yeah.
But one thing is that there was very little difference between the voice actors doing the Joker in this game and Mark Hamill. So you're not going to miss, whoever is doing the Joker does a spot-on impression of Mark Hamill's performance. Same with – it's slightly different Kevin Conroy's. But on the other hand, you know, this Batman has such a rougher edge, a rougher youthful edge. And it really shows, you know, it's not as refined as the Batman later. For example, this Batman in Arkham City, I mean, not Arkham City, Arkham Origins, can't take a compliment. He just refuses compliments. He's just, you know, and Alfred has to shout in his face, you know, at some point you're going to need the allies. You can't do this alone. Which, of course, leads to the relationship with Jim Gordon. So,
Right.
So the other games, now, I got an iPad, as you know. So I joined the iPad family, what, like a week and a half ago, maybe? So I got Pandemic, and then I started buying all these other board games for it. I bought Ticket to Ride, I bought Puerto Rico, and I bought Ra. So, I mean, all these games I play on board games, and, you know, I figured, you know, maybe I just want a single player, you know, when I can't find anybody to play. So
there you go.
Maybe I'll have mini reviews of them, because I'd have definite opinions about them, but I'll share them next week.
I'm not really a board game fan. I mean, we did pick up an autographed set of Cards Against Humanity at PAX, though. That was fun.
Yeah. No, but actually, if you can get a group, Resistance or Avalon are definitely it's technically a card game, but you know, those are games that you can play over and over and over again and never get tired of, unless you're into that.
Everybody at work is big in Dominion right now, and I'm not at work, so
building games, deck building games can go die. And I just hate those games. I mean, I actually hate those games more than in collectible card games like Magic. Actually, anyways, we're gonna move on to the first item, and this actually was an article written by you. Go ahead, Jordan.
Yes. Top 10 surprises found in the PS4 FAQ. Sony released their giant FAQ of all PS4 questions and answers. Some items have raised a few eyebrows. Number 1, no external hard drive support. The internal 500GB drive is user replaceable so long as you select a drive that is SATA 2 compatible and no thicker than 9.5 millimeters. However, you will not be able to use the USB 3.0 ports for external storage.
Well, let's stop there for a moment. What?
Yeah.
I thought that was the entire deal, that you could do external hard drives on both the Xbox One and the PS4.
Not so much.
Really? Nope. Wasn't that something they announced, though? I could have sworn they said that you'd be able to do that. Like,
I don't recall them specifically saying that.
I do.
But you know, on the PS3 you could use them for media storage, right? Yeah. You could put all your music and videos and stuff. We'll get to that.
No external hard drive support? Really?
No external hard drive support.
Okay, moving on.
Number 2, still no 4K support. During E3, it was stated the PS4 would support 4K resolutions for still pictures, and they were planning on movie support. Now it seems like none of that is actually finalized. It's listed under the FAQ as under consideration, and there certainly will be no 4K gaming.
Oh, who cares? I mean, for one thing, you know, first you have to buy the 4K TV, and
you have to have the 4K TV to make any use of it. Yes.
You know, who
cares? Yeah, yeah. I think probably they learned their lesson from the 3D stuff, and we'll get to that one a little bit later as well. Number three, HDMI only. Do you have an older TV that you'd like to use the PS4 with? Perhaps you're visiting a friend or a relative staying in a hotel with an older TV? No connectivity for you. The PS4 will automatically adjust resolution based on the TV it's connected to, but only if that set also has an HDMI port.
This is also not a problem because I know there's plenty of adapters out there.
It'll detect for 720p or 1080i or whatever the resolution is. But if you want to hook it up to a set that is composite only, you don't really have a way to hook it up.
Yeah, there are composite to HDMI adapters. You know, it doesn't increase the resolution. All it does is, you know, make the signal, you know, it'll just make the signal compatible with the, you know. But that's not as much of a problem. Also, how many you have to have a really old set not to have an HDMI port, I think.
I think there are quite a few sets that the TV set I have in my bedroom is component and S-Video.
Hmm. Well, so, you know, like I said, there are adapters. Yeah. So.
Number four, 3D gaming is dead. During the PS3 generation, Sony put a lot of effort into 3D TV and 3D gaming to the point of releasing their own PlayStation-branded 3D TV sized for dorm rooms, which was a catastrophic failure. Now, with the release of the PS4, it's as though 3D gaming is completely forgotten. Not a single launch title will be in 3D, although the PS4 is capable of it.
Oh, yeah. Let's have all the tears weeping for that. Oh, wait. No. Actually, I hear applause. Honestly, again, this was all corporate synergy, you know. And
given how hard Sony tried to push 3D in the last generation, I was kind of surprised not to see it on the PS4.
Well, again, if no one's buying it,
nobody's buying it.
Although, you know what? I'd be interested in seeing what the Oculus Rift support would be, because that's the new hotness right now.
That'll be the next big thing. Yeah.
The thing about the Oculus Rift though is you don't need a TV. I mean, you don't need a great TV to have it. I mean, it works on its own. It's a headset.
I saw an interesting thing today, which is haptic feedback in three-dimensional space.
Which means,
so imagine a Kinect that can push you back.
Right.
That would be kind of cool. Number five, no Blu-ray or DVD support out of the box. You'd think that a Blu-ray support would be a big enough deal after it was promoted so heavily on the PS3. Apparently, it's not important enough to be included on the actual default firmware. Blu-ray and DVD support both have to be enabled via a day one firmware patch.
Which leads to the next one.
Number six, Sony has a built-in backdoor. Related to number five, how do you install a firmware update if you don't have internet access? Well, that's easy. Just mail order a firmware disk or download it on your computer and install it via safe mode in a USB drive. This is a built-in pipeline for hacked firmware. Surely Sony must realize this after all the hacked firmware and piracy issues on the PSP and PS3.
Well, hopefully Sony takes a page from Microsoft and has PSN now based in, you know, on their turf and not on everybody, you know, on anybody's console, because that was the big problem. Xbox Live is more or less safe because Xbox Live isn't on your console. It's on Microsoft servers and, you know, they're remote and you can't touch them. So, I mean, and by way of that, they can also detect hacked consoles.
I'm just very surprised that you will not be able to take the PS4 out of the box and play a Blu-ray movie without having to do a firmware update. That just seems insane to me.
Remember, the Xbox, you had to have that special remote.
Yeah, you had to have the little dongle thing on the original Xbox.
No,
pay the license for it. Number seven, no audio CD support. It surprised some when the fact mentioned that there would be no MP3 support. Many people like listening to their own music in a game that won't be possible. Okay, fine. It's a feature not a lot of people use, but no CD support at all. That's been a standard feature of disc-based systems since the Sega CD. In fact, the audio quality on the original launch PlayStation has caused it to be highly sought after in audiophile circles.
Yeah.
But there will be no audio CD support at all on the PlayStation 4.
Which is odd because, you know, basically discs are the end game of physical music CDs. I mean, you really can't improve on the CD. I mean, they tried to.
Yeah.
If you remember, they tried the HD CD or something like that.
The HD CD, yeah.
But, you know, there's not much you can do except maybe compress it a little bit more, I guess. But, you know, it's odd that you can't play CDs. And a lot of people still use CDs because, unlike, you know, they're not like cassettes and they're not like albums, you know. You just made a carbon. You know, it's very cheap to make a CD. And exactly. People can burn on CDs too. And that's the bigger thing right there, by the way, is that people often burn their own discs aside from storing it on their hard drive, but they also burn discs too. It's weird. But we'll get to Microsoft's response to that later.
Yes. Number 8, no media streaming either. Speaking of not supporting media, if you really enjoyed streaming video to your PS3 or Xbox 360, you won't be able to do that on the PS4. When asked if they would support DLNA support, Sony said, nope, not currently. Although they did tweet later and say, yeah, well
we'll get to talk that. To the it's in the, it's team. In the upcoming article. You don't spoil things.
Yeah. Number 9, missing features. Suspend remove mode was presented as such a big deal, particularly at the Japanese promo video where a girl suspends Knack on her PS4 and picks it up later on her Vita at school. Not only will that feature not be available, they mention it won't be available in the FAQ twice.
Sony fans have long been used to Sony promising features that didn't happen. Remember AOL support on the PS4, PS2?
I don't remember AOL support.
They promised AOL on the PS2.
I remember most the stuff that they did deliver on the PS3 and then immediately took away. That PS2, was a bigger deal.
The motion chip. Yeah. Yes, on the PS2, you know, one thing they said it would be 1,000 times more powerful than the PlayStation 1. They said we'll have AOL support and internet, support. Not for a long while. And for internet support on the PS2, you had to jump through a lot of hoops, if I recall.
Yeah, there was not a service, and it was ugly getting internet support. And the last surprise, the final surprise out of the PS4 FAQ, number 10, remote play is not so remote. This is something I've been warning gamers about ever since the remote play announcement started hitting. If you're dreaming of accessing your PS4 from school or from the office by using your Vita, you can pretty much forget about it. Remote play on the PSP and Vita with the PS3 has been spotty at best, even within the same network. I've not once been able to successfully connect from a remote network due to the non-standard ports which are required to be open. It does not appear that any of that has changed with the PS4. They even recommend a wired connection for the PS4 and that the Vita be as close to the wireless router as possible. Oh, and if you've sprung for the 3G version of the Vita thinking you could connect from anywhere, not so much. Remote play is not supported over 3G at all.
You read Dilbert, right?
Yeah.
You read about, one of the main themes of Dilbert is that marketing keeps on promising something that the engineers can't do.
Right.
You know, this may be one of those examples. And when marketing said, oh, it's going to be able to do this and this and this, and I'm pretty sure our engineers will be able to work it because, they're magic. And the engineers are turning out their hair saying, we can't do this, not without breaking the laws of physics.
Yes.
And the marketing says, we'll break the laws of physics then.
Yeah. Now, the way remote play is supposed to work currently is you connect your PS3 to PSN, you're out and about, you connect your Vita to PSN, and then the Vita will see the PS3. The problem is, in order for that to work, you have to have two non-standard ports open on both sides, and it doesn't freaking work.
You know what really bothers me? And that is, there are so many questions about the PS4 and the Xbox One. And I already said this, despite the fact they've been in development for like 2 or 3 years now.
Well, than 2 or 3 years. Sony said they started developing the PS4 in 2008.
Well, that might be a problem right there. I mean, if you start something and then you delay it, one of two things happens. Either you get dated and you're forced to upgrade, and then you have to upgrade everything, and it just takes more time. Just look at Duke Nukem Forever.
Right.
Or we get a little thing we like to call feature creep. In which you keep on adding, and what you have is an underpowered, overfeatured mess, which is, I think might have hampered the Vita a little bit. I mean, I would have thought that of the PSP, but the PSP is a sleek operating machine compared to the Vita.
The PSP is a nice piece of kit. The Vita hardware is actually pretty solid. The problem is that there's no games in development for it.
Well, but the thing is, touchscreens on the back too and the front. You don't need all that crap.
It's actually very cool with some games.
Forget about UMDs. Forget about that. Just, Nintendo knows what they're doing. Make something that plays games and only games, and that's it.
Yeah.
But, anyways, we're gonna continue the discussion with this article because it's so related to the previous article. The Xbox One will support DLNA, MP3, and audio CD from the Inquirer. No, not that Inquirer. Not the other National Inquirer. Inquirer. Yeah. Yeah, this is the UK Inquirer.
That's Inquirer with an E, not Inquirer with an I.
Microsoft has announced that Microsoft announced that its Xbox One will be configured as an entertainment console after the revelation last week that the Sony PlayStation 4 won't support DLNA, audio CD playback, or MP3. Microsoft stepped up to announce that the opposite is true for the Xbox One. A Microsoft spokesman said the Xbox One supports audio CD playback. The Xbox One is DLNA compatible, and we are working to get certified. For MP3s, the Xbox One is a Play 2 receiver, so you can stream content from Play 2 supported devices like Windows, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, and many Windows phones. The Xbox Music will also deliver the unlimited ad-free music through an Xbox Music Pass subscription. Now, what they mean by that is that if you already have an Xbox 360, you're probably familiar with this right now, you know, in which you can hook up your computer to your Xbox 360 and stream stuff from your PC to your Xbox. That's basically what they're saying here. So they're sort of getting around that MP3 part, you know, by allowing you to do it through your computer. Now, you already mentioned this. You touched on this in the other article. Sony Worldwide Studios president Shoei Yoshida responded to the criticism about the audio incapability of the PS4. Thanks for the feedback about lack of MP3 and DLNA support at the launch of the PS4. I'll share it with the PS4 dev team for future consideration. And he said this on the 30th of October. So what does that tell you? Do you think we're going to have the PS4 will have it like a year from now?
I don't know if it'll take that long. I mean, the PS3 originally did not have DLNA support either. It took I think it was like the first half year before they could actually do that on the PS3 as well.
Yeah, the problem with that is that it's always better to have something native than something, you know, that's added on via firmware. That's one of the things. You know, if you, my opinion of this is, you know, if you don't have it from the start, it'll be half-assed anyway. You know, I mean, look at all the effort they try to make PSN like Xbox Live. You know, and they just couldn't do it because they didn't make it a core part of the system. You know, PS4 will probably do it. I mean, I don't know anything about PSN in terms of that. It'll be very interesting to see how close to the functionality of Xbox Live they're able to get with PSN this time.
The other thing that I find interesting is that neither console is going to support ripping audio CDs. The Xbox, they make a good point about it, you know, streaming from the different services and so on and so forth. But you will not be able to rip music to a hard drive and play back in a game and all of that stuff on either console.
I wonder if that'll be something. I don't know. I mean, if you can put the CD in the drive, right, and have it play, you know, there should be a way for you to rip from it. I mean,
you would think, yeah. I mean,
that's how you get around some of the iTunes DRM problems. You know, if you have old, yeah. I bought a software. Well, I didn't buy. I tested it out. You know, and I'm going to buy it later, in which basically it plays the music on your computer. It doesn't burn it. It just plays it on the computer, records it as it plays, and boom, the music now is DRM free. I mean, if Rockstar, because that's the big thing. Rockstar has always made it that you can create your own custom radio station.
Right, right.
You know, so I don't know. It's a mess. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking if they thought that MP3s would just go away. I don't see MP3s going away anytime
soon. I don't see MP3s going away either. And considering that it was such a basic feature back to the original Xbox 12 years ago now,
even
being able to rip CDs.
I mean, I was about to say Microsoft's in love with AVI, but that's a video thing.
Yeah, more of a video thing. Yeah, yeah.
Are there any? I'm pretty sure there are other music formats other than MP3.
Oh, there's all kinds of different. There's all kinds of different formats. There's AUG, Vobis. There's
format.
MG
or something.
FLAC. There's
yeah. I'm just wondering. I don't know. I mean, on the other hand, you know. Do you really, you know, I mean, I still have tons of audio CDs, but I've burned them all onto my hard drive.
I'm not that big of a music guy, so it doesn't bother me either way. I just find it surprising that they would take what so many people consider to be a very basic feature and just eliminate it.
Mm. Anyways, speaking of getting a feature into something, go ahead, Jordan.
Valve working to make offline mode indefinite. This comes to us from Eurogamer. As great as Steam is for browsing games and saving money with sales, there's always been one really irritating thorn in the distribution portal's paw. It requires players to go online every 2 weeks or so to verify their account. Some have considered this a draconian precaution against piracy, but as it turns out, this is actually just a bug Valve is actively trying to fix.
Okay, somewhere out there is saying, you can say it with me, it's not a bug,
it's a feature.
Yeah.
Offline mode is designed to be indefinite, wrote Valve staffer Henry G on the Steam user forums in response to the accusation that offline mode was designed to fail every fortnight. You can't access any of Steam's online features such as friends lists or save game synchronization, of course, but the client should allow you to run in offline mode for as long as you like. That said, there are many components involved in offline mode, and some of them have known issues and bugs, which we're continually working to improve. We're aware that it doesn't always work as flawlessly as we want it to, but please keep reporting bugs with offline mode. It's not broken by design. It's not broken intentionally. It's just broken accidentally. That's nice.
I'm not that... for me, it's not that big a deal, because... You could authenticate yourself with a dial-up if you want to.
I think I've launched Steam about 4 times in the last 2 years. So
something different. Yeah,
I'm not the best judge.
But well, maybe Alan, because he's the one who plays on Steam. You know.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I don't. You know. Okay. It's fine that they want to have offline mode indefinitely. That's fine. But you know, they already made it clear that you know you can own your games, because you can actually, people don't know this, but you can rip your games to DVDs if you want to. From Steam. Now it was an option because back in 2004, Valve reassured people, listen, if Steam doesn't work, you could actually you can rip your games to the discs and have them there, you know. So, is this a big deal to you? I mean, I don't mean you personally, because, you know, you don't play PC that much, but in terms of having to log on every 2 weeks, you know.
I think it's a common enough idea on a PC that, you know, if you want to go into your Gmail, you have to log on. If you want to go into your Yahoo, you have to log on. I don't understand what's so hard about logging into Steam.
Yeah, I mean, but some people don't want to log into Steam at all. I mean, yeah. Remember, Steam was this big bad thing back in 2004, which everybody was accusing Valve of, you know, trying to force their service on people just to play their games and all that. But, you know, when Half-Life 2 was released, people shut up pretty quickly. Right. I mean, well, most people did. I mean, there's still some people who view Steam as a DRM tool, you know. And basically, it is DRM, but it's about the most non-invasive DRM you can get, you know, while
correct.
Still being
yeah.
DRM.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know... And at some point, you know, Microsoft wants to emulate Valve because it's such a great model. That's why they tried to do the always online thing. Now, my thing is, well, you know, you should have just made it that the Xbox One is extremely online aware. So people could just turn it off. But when they turn it on and they log on, they can have the option of having all those things, you know, they really screwed it up there. I mean, I get what they were trying to do. In that it's the same thing with Kinect, you know. If everybody who owns an Xbox One has a Kinect, then it frees up developers to know that that's an option, and everybody's going to have it, right, with the Xbox One, whether they have turn it on or off. You know, with this, they said, well, you know, we have to force it online all the time so that developers know that it's always going to be online. You know, but those are two different fish. You know, people will sort of accept having a Kinect because it's, you know, they understand the value. It's $100 more. That's why it's $100 more. They don't understand why you have to be online all the time on a console, you know. So that's why Microsoft made the 360. I mean, the 180. Because if it was a 360, it would just went back where they came from. And that was the last gen. So, yeah. And I've been talking too long. Go ahead, Jordan. Say something.
Something.
There we go.
Steam is closer to you than it is to me, so I'm more than happy to let you talk about it. But
you know, the thing is that, you know, Steam, one of the great things about Steam is that you get dirt cheap prices, especially with a Humble. Oh, I forgot to see what this week's Humble bundle is. So yeah, I mean, you know, things like the Humble bundle, you know, you get a shit ton of games for $5 or $6. I mean, I now have Dead Island on the PC. I haven't played it yet. Oh, that's the other thing about the Humble Bundles, though. You get a crap ton of games. You can't play all of them at once, you know?
Right.
So I have a bunch of games I haven't even touched yet. But can you imagine having a Humble Bundle on the Xbox One or the PS4?
I think you could do that with, like, the indie or Xbox Live Arcade games. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, a few years into the service. You know? But the thing is, the Humble Bundle has some new games in it. I mean, well, Electronic Arts did the Humble Bundle, and they actually included Dead Space 3.
Speaking of Electronic Arts, did you see the announcement they had today?
No.
That they don't want to be the worst company in the world again?
Yeah, but the thing is, they're not.
You and I know they're not exactly.
I mean,
you know, they're not out there. Exactly? They're not out there, you know, murdering people and raping children
Monsanto
or anything.
They're not Monsanto, for crying out loud.
They're not Monsanto, no.
You know, it's just.
I read their announcement that how they don't want to be the worst company in the world again, and they're actually taking steps to reverse a lot of the policies that they've had in the past. I think putting stuff like a well-known popular game like Dead Space 3 in a Humble Bundle is a good step.
By the way, this week's Humble Bundle weekly sale, check this out. It's all the Worms games plus Super Frog plus all the Alien Breed games. See, the problem is I already have a couple of Alien or Worms games, but if I purchase it for, I think, $6, I get everything. And also, keep in mind, all of this is for charity, too, you know, for Child American Red Cross. So anyways, we're going to get back to the news items, and this one is amusing. This one made me laugh while I was writing it. That's how silly it is. Seriously. Okay, here we go. I lost my page. Okay. Nintendo. We have failed to establish Wii U as a quote-unquote worthy Wii successor. And this comes to us from GameSpot. The Wii U has struggled so far, selling 3.91 million units globally since its launch, below Nintendo's expectations for the platform, you think? Part of the difficulty in getting the platform off the ground comes down to Nintendo's inability to release games and services that demonstrate the Wii U's novelty relative to the original Wii, President Satoru Iwata has said. Except for its backwards compatibility with existing Wii software and accessories, we have so far failed to make the propositions worthy of the Wii U's position as the successor to the Wii system, Iwata said during Nintendo's second quarter financial results briefing. So he's not saying this to the public. He's actually saying this to investors, right? The Wii Sports Club for Wii U and Wii Fit U, sequels to quote-unquote defining Wii games, have now been available in Japan. These titles should help spur sales in Japan and abroad, but the success won't come overnight, Iwata cautioned. I remarked a while ago that it is difficult to change our prospects with just one title. Our objective for Wii U and the upcoming year-end sales season will be to dramatically change the environment surrounding the Wii U with multiple key titles that can appeal to our wide range of customers, he said. The key title and central pillar for the Wii U this holiday season, Iwata said, is, let's see if this is a surprise to you, Jordan, Super Mario 3D World, which will be released on November 22nd. Other games that Nintendo has high hopes for are Wii Party U and Mario and Sonic at the Sochi 2014 Olympic Winter Games. Nintendo will also release Donkey Kong Country, Tropical Freeze in December before high-profile games like Mario Kart 8 and Super Smash Brothers arrive in 2014. What do all these titles have in common, Jordan? Just throwing this out here.
They're the same old thing from Nintendo.
Yeah, and they have to wonder why no one cares. How really? I mean, was everybody really demanding Mario Kart 8? Really? I mean, granted, the Mario Kart games, you know, for the most part have been, you know, very high quality, but there's been a lot of complaints about Mario Kart 7, you know, that it's almost backwards. So the thing is that where are the new games?
Where are the new games, and where is the compelling reason to use that interesting tablet-style controller for the Wii U? So far, there has not been a compelling use for that controller yet.
And especially since, you know, it's a single swipe touch screen. And what I mean by that is when you use your iPad or your iPhone or even the Vita, if you swipe two fingers, it registers both fingers separately, right?
Multi-touch, right.
The Wii U tablet does not do that. You can only use one finger, one touch. That's it. that's basically the 3DS screen, you know, just on tablet. And the thing is, I think, you know, Iwata seems to ignore the fact that the Wii U tanked after 2009. It just flatlined. You know, no one bought it because it was no longer the new hotness, and all the casual users, the non-gamers, said, okay, we have it, we don't need it. And I hope for... I don't hope, because I know that they did. Nintendo was probably counting on those people to buy a Wii U. You know, and shock, you know, and I predicted this years ago, and you heard me say this, Jordan, that those people were not going to buy a whatever console came out next.
Yeah, I said the same thing too, is that Nintendo made the mistake of marketing to non-gamers, and then they acted surprised when non-gamers didn't buy games. Wow, really? Really?
It wasn't just that, though, Jordan. It was that Nintendo turned their entire attention to those people, and they alienated the core audience. Just ask, you know, Paul, the biggest Nintendo fanboy you could find, right? And he was excited to have the Wii U. And a couple of weeks later, he was grumbling about it because there was nothing for it.
Right.
You know, I mean, when your core audience keeps on getting burned, are you shocked? And by the way, Paul wasn't exactly excited about a new Mario game or a new, you know, I mean, really, Wii Fit U, that's going to save your console? Really? I mean, the Zumba games for the 360 Kinect sell more than the Wii U titles.
Yeah.
I mean, really, here's the thing, is that right now the 3DS is the only thing that's keeping Nintendo afloat, I think.
Well, the 3DS is keeping them afloat, and here's what they should do if they were smart. And if anybody is listening at Nintendo, you're more than welcome to take this idea and run with it. Remember how the GameCube had the adapter to play Game Boy Advance games? They need an adapter so that in combination with your television set and the Wii U tablet, you can play all of the DS and 3DS games.
Yeah,
and instead of doing a 2DS, just come up with a $50 adapter that lets you plug in 3DS and DS games into the Wii U, and they're off to the races. They now have a license to print money. But why they're not doing it, I don't know. We can't even begin to fathom. It's not like they haven't done it before. Like I said, they did it with the GameCube. The virtual console on the Wii had a whole bunch of other games from other systems. They need to be able to bring these games to the Wii U, and so far they have not.
I think what you need to do is just, you know, and they're not going to be able to do this, is just get rid of the old guard. Get rid of them. I mean, remember what Disney did in the early 80s when they were almost down and out. They started listening to the newer people, and that's why you had movies like Tron, you know, because they were experimenting.
Black Hole.
Yeah. I wasn't a fan of Black Hole, by the way. No.
It was a different attempt from them. You know,
Cowboy Robots, seriously?
Cowboy Robots.
But although I will say that the merging of Maximilian with Maximilian was a robot, right? And who was the villain again?
I don't remember. I haven't seen it in 30 years.
When it was funny that Maximilian, when they went into the black hole, was revealed as the devil, you know? And he merged with the evil scientist. I think that was going a little bit beyond what, you know, what Disney did. And I thought that was cool. The rest of it was, you know, they should remake that, except with real physics, you know, and not plunging into a black hole to go into a, you know, into a wormhole or anything like that. You know, just have a, you know, something like that. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next sign, which is related. And this is basically a PSA, actually, more of a PSA than anything else.
Do you want me to do it, or you?
Two.
Okay. Wii U bundle announced. This comes to us from Gadget Reviews. The 16-gigabyte basic console released at $299 and still at almost the same price at all retailers. But this week at Best Buy, that same $300 gets you an upgraded 32-gigabyte deluxe Wii U console and two bonus games, new Super Mario Bros. U and new Super Luigi 2.
Yes.
Shouldn't
Nintendo be releasing this?
Best Buy is doing it themselves. So basically, they're giving away $100 worth of games on a $300 console, reducing the price of that to effectively $200. When retailers start doing this, that's generally the sign that the end is coming. I have predicted that this Christmas is going to be the last Christmas for the Vita. I believe it will also be the last Christmas for the Wii U.
I don't mind if it's the last Christmas, you know, because remember, I was on the Dreamcast when it was $40, like white on rice.
Yeah.
You know?
I know you were.
And the thing is that it's going to be very interesting. I'd love to see what kind of Wii U sales are going to be on Black Friday.
It will be interesting to see, but you know, most of the big Wii U games are games that you can play on every other console. So,
well, I mean, the thing is that I don't have the Nintendo. They did just re-release the revision of Zelda Wind Waker, if I recall. Yeah, but the thing is, you know, I mean, at some point, you know, if the Wii U is going to be $30 or $40 or $50, I'll buy it. And if, you know, if it's backwards compatible, oh wait, let me ask you a question. Is the Wii U backwards compatible disc-wise with the GameCube?
No.
Oh, rats. Okay, then I'll have to, because I'm still thinking about Eternal Darkness, you know, and maybe I'll get a Wii, I should get a GameCube dirt cheap and just play, you know,
If you get one of the first gen Wiis that has the GameCube ports on it, absolutely you could play Eternal Darkness that way.
Or I could just cut out the middleman and just get a GameCube.
That's true. You could get a GameCube even cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, suppose I get a GameCube for $20 and Eternal Darkness for $10. You know, they're a $30 game there.
There you go. That's worth $30.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my TV does have composite ports so that I can play it on there without yanking out anything. So, anyways, we're gonna move on to listener feedback. Go ahead, Jordan.
From Arthur the Fifth at Gaming Flashback, I don't tend to associate UK with good game development due to the life-choking taxes, but Bolo sounds like a clever and complex action strategy game. Almost makes me wish I was born 20 years earlier to play it. Almost being old sucks. To be honest, I feel like there are no good online games anymore, and most that are released are just regurgitations of earlier success. I'm hoping next gen will bring a breath of fresh air to the competitive online world.
Yeah. Oh, there was a bit of a fuffle about Call of Duty Ghosts, by the way.
What was the deal on Call of Duty? Oh, beside the fact that the commercials don't show any actual game footage.
Oh, they have shown actual game footage. No, the thing is that, did you know that the game won't let you play on PC without having 6 gigabytes of RAM?
I did not know that.
But when you do play it, it takes up 1.8 gigabytes of RAM on your memory. And people are wondering where the hell it requires 6 gigabytes of RAM for.
I don't know.
And additionally, it only has 65 degrees of forward viewing, which isn't good news for people who are who have motion sickness. So,
at Rats Leaving the Sinking Ship, I played a few demos of PGA Tour, but never liked them. The concept of hitting a ball with a club across the same field of green is probably the most pathetic attempt at recreation mankind has ever devised. It should be renamed PGAL, Please Get a Life. First official COD free for all tournament. Whenever I hear news like this, it makes me think that everyone in the Activision management offices evacuated the building and left a duck in charge. Where are they beta testing Black Friday or something?
You know, the thing is that that stunt brings
like
us back to
the idea of a duck in charge.
Yeah, brings us back to the good old days of Acclaim. Oh, Acclaim and your promotions. it almost makes me wish they were still around just so they could keep making promotions. I want to see what they would do next.
That's true. I don't know. The Nader is putting advertisements on tombstones. That was just wrong.
That was clearly
the decision of a duck in charge.
Yeah, but you know, nothing will beat Sony, you know, beheading a live goat.
I forgot about that. That was good. And the black versus white ads that they had for the PSP. That was remarkably poorly conceived.
Yeah, but you know, in Europe it isn't so much so.
Yeah.
They don't take it as racial. They just take it as color, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it wasn't like she was a slave owner or something. I mean,
yeah. Well, you know, she was just, you know, holding a black woman by her neck.
oh, I forgot about that.
At the question of the week, And we had asked, you know, to ask us a question: what's your favorite soundtrack? With the atrocious state that that the contemporary music industry is in, I tend to turn more and more towards the anime and gaming tunes. My favorite is the opening march of Morrowind, and my favorite song has to be Still Alive, both from Mirror's Edge and Portal. Other notable tracks are Utada Hikaru's Kingdom Hearts ending, both Japanese and English, Gitaru Man soundtracks, Final Fantasy X, and too many others to mention. Gaming has some good tunes. What's yours?
Now, before we go, I will say that Morrowind has a great one. It's so great that they kept on using it for all their subsequent games. Okay, I'm going to go, you know, I can't just do one, so I'll just go way back in time and go forward. Now, the music that I remember the most when growing up was the music from Ultima 3 and Ultima 4, you know? On the Commodore 64, by the way. It had to be the Commodore 64 because of the SID chip. And, you know, when I popped in that, I remember Christmas Eve, I popped in Ultima 4, and the music came on, and that was it. I for 14 hours straight, I played, and that music is burned in my brain. You know, every single, the town music, the overland music, when you meet Lord British, you know, Hail Britannia.
Right.
It's just, you know, that music, well, I can hear it, and, you know, I can hear it in my brain even as we speak. Your turn, Jordan. Well, here,
I thought you were going to keep going.
No, stay in the Commodore 64 era, okay? Oh, wait a minute.
I'm gonna flip it from Commodore 64 to an arcade game from that same era, and go with Gyrus.
Ah, yes, but that was
Gyrus had the best soundtrack of any arcade game.
Huh? So had Sebastian Bach.
Toccata and Fugue in D minor. It's a chiptune version of it.
No, it's the hooked on version.
But if you pull up a video of Gyrus, you will see immediately what I mean. Best music from an arcade game ever.
Well, you know, staying with the 64 era, I almost forgot about this, and I slapped myself for not doing it, but the theme to Mule. You know, that music just got you started, you know. And it's one of those games in which you must play same machine. You cannot... It should be banned that you play online. You must play with your friends next to you. Because there's no way you can't get the most out of that game without when you're driving up prices for food and you're the food, you know, you have all the food and no one else and no one else has made it and you're the only one who has food. It's like you're driving up prices like, come on, if you want food, you got to pay this much for it, you know, and just see the expression on your friends' faces because...
The C64 game that I think had the best soundtrack was a fairly obscure one called Fast Freddy. Did you ever...
That one, yeah.
So Fast Freddy had chiptune versions of classic rock from the 70s. First time I ever heard Crocodile Rock was in Fast Freddy.
Now, by the way, in the arcade also, it's sort of a cheat, but Vanguard, only because it starts with Star Trek Star Trek The Motion Picture, and when you power up, it does Voltan's theme from Flash Gordon, you know? And the reason why it starts with the Star Trek The Motion Picture was a very interesting reason. That game was supposed to be based on the movie. And that your ship was supposed to be a little Enterprise. Which now that I look at it, yeah, it does sort of vaguely remind me of entering V'ger's space. You know?
Yeah.
But now, I'm going to go with songs. Now, the best song soundtrack ever that I remember, and all the songs are burned in my head, are from Jet Set Radio Future.
Yes.
You know? That introduced me, for one thing, to Sebo Matto and Birthday Cake. And, you know, like this.
Funk soul, brother.
Like this, like that. I like it. No, I don't like it. Not at all. You know, all those songs, you know, it was just so perfect. You know, the songs would be mixed with each other so well, you know. It's just playing it, you know, is like, ah. I mean, I never played Jet Set Radio or Jet Grind Radio or whatever.
The original.
Jet Set Radio Future, wow. That was quite an introduction for me.
It was a very good game, and it fixed a lot of the problems that the original had, like the time limits and stuff. In terms of actual songs, for me, it's kind of – I'm going to kind of lump two together here because they're so very similar in a lot of ways. and that's the original BioShock and Fallout 3, both picking a very heavy retro soundtrack.
Well, especially when you first enter and the instrumental version of Under the Sea starts playing.
Yes, exactly. Very heavily sentimental music for me from the 40s and 50s, although I am not that old. That's definitely my
music.
You
have ears, you know.
I have ears, yeah. if you've seen my television, you know, I'm sitting in front of a vintage 1958 Philco Predicta television set. You know, that
which does HDMI.
which does not do HDMI, but it does do component. Oh.
That would be funny, by the way, if you had that and it does HDMI.
No, I got it like in 2001, so it's well older, much older than HDMI. But those songs were fantastic. In most cases, I don't really pay attention to music in video games. Let me rephrase that. I don't really pay attention to music, period. It kind of is background noise, and I don't really hear it when I'm playing. But
the opposite is true for me.
I can't play Final Fantasy games around my wife because it drives her crazy. And she's like, how can you listen to that? And I'm like, I don't even hear it. Sorry.
See, movies the same thing with me. Movies, I hear the score a lot, and a great score can save a movie for me. As a matter of fact, the main reason why I became a Star Trek fan was a lot of people of our age, you know, saw Star Trek II, and a lot of us saw it because Ricardo Montalban was in it, and he was Mr. Rourke from Fantasy Island. But James Horner's score was so perfect that it made me a fan of the series, you know, the entire series.
The I don't really hear the music unless it's astoundingly bad or really, really, really good. So, you know, the Final Fantasy fight music, Pokemon fight music, all of that stuff, I don't even hear it. But when it's something like the Grand Theft Auto games, I'm like, oh, where do I turn off that noise? So, you know, that's one end of the spectrum. Same thing with a Vita game, Persona 4 Golden. Could not find a way to turn off the freaking music. Stopped playing the game because I could not stand hearing that J-pop crap soundtrack.
Did you ever play Eternal Sonata?
No, I heard about it. I think I played the demo of Eternal Sonata.
And the thing is that, you know, the very first, they have interludes, right, in which they actually, it becomes a literal history lesson of Chopin. It literally has all these still photos and plays Chopin music in the background, and it just has walls of text talking about, you know, but as counterproductive as it may sound, it actually really heightens the game. And it makes you even more invested. And wisely, the first interlude that they have is the Raindrop Prelude, right? And it talks about Chopin's relationship with George Sand and how he became, you know, he went to the Bahamas and became sicker and sicker and sicker. Now, keep in mind, this is not a spoiler. This game is about Chopin dying in bed, and the entire game is inside his head. Right, so it adds that poignancy to the game, you know, and especially using the Raindrop Prelude and all that. And for those who don't know the Raindrop Prelude, maybe if you're a Halo fan, that was part of the Believe campaign. Remember the diorama? That was so good. That was so well done, the diorama, and they played the Raindrop Prelude there. Now, as for modern games, and by modern I mean say the last 3 or 4 years, maybe. My favorite soundtrack is, hands down, Mass Effect 2.
I don't remember the music from Mass Effect 2.
Really?
I played it
at the beginning of one of the episodes.
Well, that would require me to actually listen to the episode.
I mean, everybody loves the final music from that game, in which they're rallying, you know, and all that stuff. And I think the Mass Effect trilogy mirrors the first trilogy of Star Wars. You know, the first game was okay, you know, it caught people's imagination, but it was technically off, you know, it wasn't that great technically, but, you know, it had that gem of a great idea. Mass Effect 2 was light years beyond it. It was The Empire Strikes Back, right? You know, in which everything just hit every single note perfectly. And then Mass Effect 3 is sort of like Return of the Jedi, in which, you know, it's sort of creaky, you know, it's trying to build upon what the second one did. isn't quite as successful. People still enjoy it. Still has now it has a satisfying ending, you know. So actually, it sort of mirrors the first trilogy, which doesn't bode well since Mass Effect 4 is going to be a prequel.
Mild disinterest.
Oh, dear.
Mass Effect 4.
I'm still interested, you know, but it better not be the Phantom Menace. But anyways, you know, Mass Effect 2, really.
You get to play a little kid going, yippee!
By the way,
and that little kid grows up to be Commander Shepard.
Oh, and Batman Arkham Origins really has the best music of the three games as well. I must point that out, by the way. It really does it well. So how about you, recent games?
Well, you know, I talked about
BioShock Infinite.
BioShock and Fallout 3. Slightly less than recent. I think the Halo soundtrack is a classic.
Yeah, I avoided that.
Absolute classic.
That's low-hanging fruit, though. I avoided that. But Marty O'Donnell is really – and by the way, the best music of the Halo series for me by far is Halo 3 ODST.
You know what? We did forget a game, and it's not a modern game, but it's an all-time classic game with one of those soundtracks that you cannot get out of your head. Once you hear it, it will not leave. And I apologize for doing this to you, but
what is that from? I don't recognize
Tetris.
Oh,
Tetris.
Yeah, I mean, it's you have to have it in a Russian way.
Yep.
Yeah, the thing is, I didn't play Tetris all that much, actually. I played it in the latter years, you know, when it became on everything.
Yeah.
But, I'm sorry. Mule is the earworm to end all earworms, really. I mean, you cannot listen to Mule and not just start having it infested in your brain. I mean, when I was playing Spore, one of the planets I visited, all of a sudden the Mule music started popping up. I was like, what the heck? That was a neat little Easter egg, having the Mule music just pop up. So, anyways, you know what? So Arthur's question is going to be our question for you guys out there. What was your favorite soundtrack in a game? And
that's a very good question, Arthur. Thank you very much for submitting that.
You know what? We'll divide it too. We want to hear your musical score soundtrack and your lyrical score soundtrack. You know, music and then songs. You know, which games had the best song soundtrack is something different. I will also say, by the way, the music soundtrack for all Telltale games are often top notch. You know. The recent one, The Wolf Among Us, is no exception. It has a very good soundtrack. As a matter of fact, I'm playing it a third time, the first episode. Well, you know, it remembers all the decisions you make. And in this one, you know what? From a lot of discussions, you know, I wanted to see it, is that everybody reacts when he's silent. You know, unlike Lee in The Walking Dead, if you don't say anything, people just continue on, you know. But in this case, your silence is actually a response, right? And it does work. I mean, you know.
The way it is in some Japanese games where your dialogue choice is dot, dot, dot.
Well, that's the way it is in A Wolf Among Us, dot, 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 you know. So, yeah, I mean, but it really is satisfying. But I think I'll stick with my first playthrough as the quote-unquote canon for me.
Now, is that the new game from Telltale?
It's a new game. Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
It's based on Fables by Bill Willingham.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You play Big B Wolf.
Oh, excellent.
By the way, this is one of the few Telltale games that has a boss fight in it, except for, of course, Jurassic Park. But you know what? The boss fight makes you feel so badass. It does. And it actually is a great character establishing moment for the wolf. But you've read Fables, right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, this is based on Fables. You play Bigby Wolf. And for those of you who don't know this, it's about fairy tale creatures who are now living in New York, and they live among the Mundys, you know. And the big bad wolf is basically the sheriff. And, you know, when he gets mad, you know, his eyes turn yellow and he starts reverting back to his wolf form. Because what happens is that to remain in New York, you must have a glamour that makes you look human. Otherwise, you get sent to the farm in upstate New York. So Bigby is the sheriff, but you know everybody remembers what an asshole he was in all those stories, you know, blowing down the blowing down the houses of the little three little pigs, trying to eat Little Red Riding Hood, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, if you're a fan of the comic book series, you should try it out.
And I didn't know it was based on that. I will definitely check it out. And I still need to finish 400 Days and then get ready for Walking Dead Season 2.
Did you see the teaser for Walking Dead Season 2?
I did see the teaser for Walking Dead Season 2.
Apparently, you are going to be playing as Clementine. And she's only going to be around 11 or 12 years old, which will be very interesting because they specifically said about her is that her moral choices, you're going to be doing the moral choices of a kid.
Right.
So that'll be an interesting perspective. And, you know, the first season was so well written, you know, for the most part, that it'll be interesting to see. Although, what they stated is that they learned some lessons from The Walking Dead for The Wolf Among Us. And that is that often in The Walking Dead, you would choose a response and Lee's actions would be totally not what you expected from the response that you gave, right? Well, now in The Wolf Among Us, you know, if it says, I don't think so. Bigby will actually say, I don't think so, and continue on. You know, so you're
actually
doing the dialogue that matches what's going to happen. There's not going to be any funny surprises. So, yeah.
That was a problem in Walking Dead in that, you know, you would pick what you would thought would be a fairly mild reaction, and Lee would just go freaking insane for no apparent reason.
Yeah. So, anyways, yeah, check it out. I have the season pass, so, you know. Fortunately, the issues that were on the PC version are non-existent with the XBLA/PSN version, so you're good there. Anyway.
What issues were there?
What?
People
couldn't log on.
Mm.
And what happens is, for the PC version, you have to log in to Telltale to basically authenticate it, and people couldn't do that for a while. So they couldn't play the game that they just paid for. And this is only for when you bought it directly from Telltale. People
More fun on with DRM.
Issue. Yeah. So anyway, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast and the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send us comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at GameStooch.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments.
Yay, iTunes comments.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, you should get The Wolf Among Us immediately. It's very mature, as you might expect. And I never read the comics, but it is making me go into Comixology and purchase the first issue of the series.
Bill Willingham actually started as an artist for TSR doing Dungeons & Dragons books, which was always interesting. And his art was immediately recognizable every time he did a page. And he moved into comics. He did his own independent book called Elementals in the early 80s. That was very, very good.
Okay, now so, I'm going to buy a thing from Comixology now.
Yep.
Anyways, we'll see you next week.
See you, everybody.